This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Good morning, kia ora, and welcome to Free Left Turn here on 89. Free Left Turn, a left wing perspective here on 89.0, independent community media. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
That was a rather.
Bit rough. Yeah, I jumped the gun a bit there. So, yeah. Good morning, Mick.
How's it going, guys?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Except for.
Oh, yeah, right. Now, I've got to eat humble pie because I've been. I suppose remiss and various excuses, but none of them would hold up in court. I got sick this week, and I've just got out of bed basically. Had a real rough week with the flu. So my advice is to people: if you haven't had your flu vaccine, go down to the chemist or whoever's doing them and get them done.
Yeah, because yeah. The papers earlier this week that the GPs and emergency department have been overrun with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I honestly thought at one stage I might have to go to hospital because I was really sick. But then I thought there's nothing they can't give you antibiotics. They can give you fluids and that. And the best thing, I live on my own, so the best thing is if you go to the hospital, someone's checking you.
The recurring theme in the articles was that the vaccinations have gone down.
Yeah. Hey, the joys of social media and. You know,
all sorts of spurious reasons.
Yeah,
I swear, but I've had flu injections for the last 3 decades.
Yeah, well, look at COVID. You haven't had either.
No,
you ditto with me. Yeah, but not the 30-year thing. But probably say last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
I swear by it. It seems to do the job.
Yeah. You're a living example.
Yeah.
And I could have been a dead example.
then I'll just be a statistic.
And then you two would be sitting there going, "Where's Fred?
Doesn't he look stupid now?"
And people here, like, so that's right. We're all good.
Yeah,
we've got a couple of things that we can carry over from last week.
Both you and I, three of us, were talking last week about the proposed. Change of the voting system from STV to first past the post. I'm glad to say it's been challenged and it's been reversed.
Yeah, so the figures were, because originally they were 9-6, weren't they?
Yeah.
For first past the post, which I call worst past the post, for the 2028 and 2031 local body elections.
Yeah. On this occasion, when they revoked it, it was an 11-4 vote in favour of Sue Moroney's motion to revoke. And it was seconded by Robert Niha. Yeah. But the issue hasn't gone away. Deputy Mayor Geoff Taylor and Councillor Andrew Bidd remain staunch supporters of first past the post, which they're entitled to, arguing STV is overly complex and deters voter participation, which I question.
They're lazy.
I still think that it doesn't matter what voting system we have, those poor people who don't vote under one system aren't likely to vote under another system.
And that's it in a nutshell.
It's a
spurious argument.
I had the pleasure, or maybe displeasure, because my manager was listening to the online feed about the county meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the, we call them more the notorious people, you mentioned two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Taylor sounded like he was stuck in his echo chamber with McIndoe, because McIndoe was going on about the fact that he went to an old folks' home and they approached him and said, "Oh, STT is so difficult, I'm not going to vote." Well,
those same people, there's a chance that those same people would have difficulty voting on another system.
Oh, yeah, any system.
Because you get to the age where you give them too much choice, you go, "Oh, I can't cope." And
yeah, then there
so
was...
It's another spurious argument.
Then there was Bider. And he got on caught up in this what I call this anal argument about the calculations, how to work the votes
but
out.
It's nothing to do with him though.
No, it isn't. It's to do with electoral people.
Yeah,
yeah, and that was to me was quite a, as you say, you are using your phrase, a spurious argument.
Yeah,
and then we had Leo Liu talking about that he favoured if is. First past the post or worst past the post, because it was too difficult for people to understand.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
But the credible argument that my manager put up was if we didn't have STV, Lou wouldn't have got on council because of...
It's a good chance.
Yeah, good chance he wouldn't have made it.
More direct. Yeah.
Yeah, first past the post is mainly around voter... recognition of the candidate, and he was as far as I'm concerned, a candidate that was not well known.
The only time I ever seen him was on a billboard.
In
between different elections. Well, I don't know anything about you, and you can't go by those leaflets they publish.
Yeah,
and they have their little spiel.
Then there was this odd one from so-called East Ward candidate councillor Jamie Strange, aka Strange Jamie, who went on about. He was using that Wellington example and saying it was hard for a independent to get on the council in Wellington. What's that got to do with Hamilton?
Yeah. Well, it's even further good news because Taylor and Bidder proposed an amendment to stick with first past the post and leave it to the public to gather 6,000 signatures to force a referendum, noting that the council could hold a referendum if the required 6,000 signatures were obtained before the 2028 local body elections. That amendment was defeated 10-4.
Who was, apart from Bider and Taylor, who were the other two to make up the four?
I don't know. I know Andrew Leary's a supporter of First Past the Post. I'm just trying to find it in the article. She's a strong supporter of First Past the Post.
So she'd be one of those four.
The amendment was not an endorsement by council or either system.
Well, she's made a rod for her own back.
I thought she was quite progressive, but
I don't think she is. I think worst past the post is not progressive. It's anachronistic, e.g., see what happens in England, Australia, and in the United States.
Yeah.
The other
Councillor Maria Huerta.
Yeah, that's
admitted she made the wrong call on August the 6th. As a responsible adult, you should be able to admit when you're wrong. It's about allowing the public to have a say on a crucial part of democracy.
As Fred said before, she's eaten humble pie.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Another councillor was conflicted about which way to go. And I thought, you put yourself up for public office and you don't have a stance either for or against. The good news is it's been revoked. It's been reversed.
I think Robbie Niehaus was one on the feed that I listened to talking about getting feedback by people who were concerned that how council would do this and erode democracy.
Yeah, so it's a victory for the people, even if some of the people don't really appreciate it. But it's good.
Yeah, it's a victory for democracy, as they say.
Yeah.
And then people, the bigger question of voter participation in local body elections.
Should
we be looking at why people are not voting at that level instead
and
of?
If you've got, if this is the quality of public servants. You can see why some people would just be turned off.
Yeah, well...
Which, of course, it serves a purpose for the status quo because they don't care if they don't vote.
Yeah, given the names that I mentioned, Taylor, Lou, Bider, McIndoe, Strange, that's kind of self-interest stuff.
Yeah.
Niha, Moroney, probably Casey Cox, Thompson, and whoever else voted on that side.
Yeah.
Thinking about more in line of we the people.
Yeah.
And it was good to see somebody actually fessed up and said, I made a mistake.
It says in the further in the article, said the council eventually backed an amendment to Moroney's Act motion, led by Councillor Angela O'Leary and Councillor Mesh MacDonald. That amendment sees Hamilton retain STV and enables voters to determine their preferred system of voting on the same date as the 2028 local body election.
So there you go.
If it was voted through 12-2, which Councillor Leo Liu joining Taylor in dissent.
Yeah,
it's good news after.
Yeah. But I would say to Mr. Councillor Liu, thank your lucky stars did you had STV, otherwise you wouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
Now, the other one from last time, from last week, was the forestry slash issue in over on the East Coast.
Right.
And what I said last week is that there was a proposal or plan by the Gisborne City District Council, and Bishop said no. Well, there was more information in regard to that.
Right.
Which I acquired quite by chance from Stuff, and I'm just trying to find it in here.
So is the decision not to do anything being reconsidered?
No.
Right.
No. Now, I'll go back into here. I've put my stuff out of order. But there was also a young lad, and his name was Oliver.
Was he a casualty?
He was a casualty. What he did was he was riding on a log,
when in
the surf, and the thing flipped.
Oh no!
And he got stuck under it, and I think he either got crushed by the log,
or drowned. Yeah.
Oliver's his name, and he was.
That stuff's still on the beach, isn't it?
Yeah, and he was 11 years old.
Wow!
And then there were comments made by the likes of Todd McClay, which was to say, "Oh, we shouldn't be scaring off the forestry investors."
Really?
Yeah, we shouldn't be scaring them off. Well, no, we don't want to do this.
So we'll scare the residents away?
Or scare the investors away.
Mm.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter about the residents.
No, it doesn't matter about we the people stuff. Yeah. It's all about...
Money.
And the other one was from our so-called Deputy Prime Minister.
Uh-huh.
And he written an email or letter to to the Gisborne District Council. Dear Gisborne District Council, I've been contacted by Summit Forestry, who have raised concerns about the enforcement orders under the Resource Management Act to manage slash and woody debris. They argue that this unilateral and unpredictable approach is damaging to investor confidence, personally exposed to directors named on the enforcement order, and costly. I would like to remind you the government's objective is for New Zealand to welcome those wanting to invest capital here if there is no risk to national security. The investment creates jobs and economic growth, as international perception of regulatory uncertainty or that regulators will use blunt force enforcement tools compromises strategy by discouraging investment. So just another line around people, profits before people.
Yeah.
That's all it is. They don't really care about that the beaches, look for a better word, an eyesore, even though there could be a potential tourist selling point.
I don't seem to be worried about that.
They're worried about the forestry investors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're
selective in their business protections.
So,
protections for me, but not for
we. Yeah. And then there was a comment in here that the council were looking at some sort of they've brought on board to help with their sort of a review, and it's and the person would be the person to lead the review is former National MP and Attorney General Chris Finlayson. It says in here, last week, Gisborne Mayor wrote to the Minister of Forestry, Todd McClay, to say that the council had commissioned an independent assurance review of the council's forestry consenting and compliance system. The review would be led by Chris Finlayson.
Great.
Yeah, so, to look at
so,
it.
So, There's a potential for another tragedy somewhere.
Yeah, to make sure that the Gisborne City Council or District Council were doing was independent, basically. What they were doing, asking for a plan for this, for the slash to be addressed, because given what the government, the position is, the slash won't be addressed.
No.
But the council want the...
So profits before people.
Yeah, the council are wanting the slash issue addressed.
Well, yes.
Yeah, yeah. What they call stronger compliance measures.
I mean, this sounds almost like a modern-day version of robber barons who acquired property and just did whatever they liked to maximise profits and to hell with the...
With we the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Oliver, young Oliver, 11 years old, was a victim of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that was...
The companies avoided accountability.
Well, that's what the government are trying to do. Don't scare the investors off.
So a family's lost a young boy.
Yeah, he lost a young boy.
And no one is being held accountable.
Not currently, by the sounds of it.
It's disgusting, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Profits before people. Yeah, and basically you go by the three ministers of the Crown and what they've said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So to counter what that is, Gisborne District Council have sent up an independent review. So and they're using Chris Finlayson to head that review. Yeah. So yeah, and he's been a critic of the particular this current government, particularly their Maori bashing stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah.
Oh, watch the space.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one. I thought, as I say, we had some information of it last week, but I dug out more information.
Right.
Yeah. This week. Ah. Lo and behold, and our absent co-host bring his letter in today.
Personal details for ready for the election.
Yes. So I got mine on Wednesday.
I think I got mine on Thursday.
And I checked my details and
same here.
I don't have to do anything and don't have to waste.
But if people haven't received it or are in doubt, they've got to the 25th of October to register.
Yeah, yeah, it's saying here, I think the best one is said check your electorate.
Yeah.
Electorate you are enrolled to vote in is on the letter on the pack. The name and boundaries of some electorates have changed, and we know that.
Yeah.
You might be in a different electorate from the one you voted in last election, so you need to find out if you're still in that electorate or you're in a new electorate.
Mm.
And you need to be enrolled early. They said the last day you can enrol or update your address is midnight, Sunday the 25th of October.
Yeah.
Yeah. And enrol by the 4th... this year, you need to be enrolled before voting starts. You can't enrol and vote at the same time, unfortunately.
That's gone.
Yeah, yeah. And if you turn 18 on the day of the election, well, too bad. The government have been miserable about that. Enrol by the 4th of October to get your Easy Vote card. This makes voting faster, means we can count your vote more quickly. Yeah.
I got the package.
That comes later.
I don't remember a card.
Easy Vote card. You get those.
So is that supposed to be a form of ID? Is it?
Yeah. So when you go to vote, you get your card. Show your card. Mm-hmm.
I might just take my passport along as well, just in case, because if there's no photo ID.
Yeah. Yeah. So so what happens? The card will have your name, the electorate. I think it's a page. And the line the line or the column you're on?
Yeah, because normally when you go in to voting booth, they've got the big book there and they go click through the button and they find a line and they go zip and find your name, address.
Yeah, and cross you out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever they do with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I do urge people to enrol. I do urge people to participate.
Yeah, I do, yeah. And that comes back to
I don't care how people vote. I just want them to participate.
Yeah.
So we get a more representative parliament.
So that's what we said about the whole thing about the council and their endeavours to usurp a single transferable vote. It's not about the voting system. It's about the participation.
Yes.
And that's where we have real problems about participation.
And it's a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just peculiar to New Zealand. It's the same in the UK and in the States.
Yeah, yeah. Europe. Low voter turnout.
Yeah.
what else have you got there, Mick?
We were talking about this before we came on air. This is Wednesday's Times. It was a cut to payments unacceptable. Prime Minister says sorry after winter energy money was suspended after following bungled law change. Now, you thought it was to do with last year's...
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
But in this article, it mentions this year.
Oh, yeah.
And it said the Post revealed on Tuesday that close to 15,000 pensioners had had their winter energy payments suspended thanks to a new law that required a huge variety of beneficiaries to prove their eligibility for various extra payments at least once a year. Payments stopped if paperwork... And I suddenly thought, I wonder if this has got anything to do with the CYC form that I had to complete earlier this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that must tie into it somewhere, because they also said it was a computer glitch or something, the old computer glitch chestnut.
Yeah, yeah.
But it may be these people hadn't completed that form.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I thought, am I getting it? I thought, I looked at what my bank statement, I thought, it looks like it, but I rang them up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I thought, I was half my... I knew they're going to be inundated with phone calls. But there's an automated message to begin. If you're one of the... They mentioned the fact that some people hadn't received winter payments, and they said if you are found to be one of the people affected, they will get in contact with you by my MSD or email or letter and sort it out. But in my case, the person was able to confirm within 30 seconds, yes, you're getting it. So it's great.
We got it this year. Mm-hmm. Margaret turned 65 in February. So right. When it came into being on the 1st of May,
mm-hmm.
It was there, and it was there for a two-person household, so yep. or a couple. So it's the 31 or whatever it is dollars per week, 60-odd a fortnight. So that was in there, and that continued through. So I'm the person who checks the internet banking. And yeah, we've been getting it. So I was under the understanding
it was from last year.
And that's the way that
the article says this year.
Yeah. So I was
Bungled law change. This is where people had to require additional information or provide additional information.
Yeah. So you've read from what you said.
I think it's got something to do with the CYC form that people were asked to complete.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
It doesn't say that in the article.
No,
that was the connection I made. The only extra information I was required to provide this year was that CYC form, just to confirm my details.
I think the evidence may be in what Hitkins had said at the end of this article.
Right.
He said that there was no doubt the urgency contributed to the error.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things done under urgency.
It was done in 2 days.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not just rushed, that's pushed, shoved.
Yeah, yeah. Urgency was the cause of this blunder. You ram law changes through with no scrutiny. You are going to make mistakes. The government forced us through in a hurry, and they made mistakes, and ultimately they need to accept responsibility.
And that's the argument we've been promoting since this fast-tracking stuff.
Yeah,
mistakes get made. There's no counterbalance, no checks and balances.
This is what comes back to Upston.
Mm.
Upston says she was not yet happy with the amount of information she had received from the Ministry of Social Development on the matter. Doesn't the buck stop with the government?
Yeah.
Because they push
she's
through
the minister in charge, the buck stops with her.
Yeah. She should pay it out of her pocket.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like she claims that accommodation supplement.
She's quick to do that.
Yeah, self-entitled woman.
Yeah, in a similar vein, cost of living bites. I don't know if you meet many elderly people in your job, Craig, but this was in Thursday's paper. Cost of living bites for elderly. First older person's poverty monitor reports says thousands of over 65s can't afford essentials. Tens of thousands of New Zealanders over the age of 65 are experiencing material hardship, cannot afford basic necessities, including healthy food, clothing, a new report was found. The Older Person's Poverty Monitor report released yesterday, this would have been Wednesday, by the New Zealand Council Christian Social Services has delivered a snapshot of poverty and hardship among the country's older population. The council said the report was the first of its kind in New Zealand, offering a baseline to measure poverty during later life. The report found that almost 20% of New Zealanders over the age of 65 had put off dental and doctor's visits due to cost. 147,000 lived in an accommodation they did not own, 17.25%. 102,000 were living on below 50% of mean income after housing costs, 12%. About 25,000 of New Zealanders in this age bracket were living in material hardship or living without the essentials. It should not be, and the report goes on, it should not be acceptable that tens of thousands of people reach retirement and still cannot afford healthcare, secure housing, or the basic essentials of everyday life. And no surprises here. Women, Maori, and Pacific older people were shown to experience disproportionate higher levels of hardship. This is a first world country, and there's people struggling.
Yeah. Not good at all.
No.
I don't know if I kind of come up against it, not naturally.
You must get the odd case that comes through.
We hear about people like, not living without the essentials.
Yeah. And of course, we're getting young. Well, they've also had reports earlier this year, but younger people in families who don't get the basic necessities of life.
Older person's poverty monitor.
Also had other reports for different age brackets too, working families not being able to afford rent or GP visits or healthcare visits for the kids.
It goes on. We are a wealthy nation, but we got this.
Yeah,
and you sort of stressed the 20%.
That's a lot of people.
I think even those people who are approaching 65. Are also in that boat, as I've found. Like people, I won't turn the power on, I won't turn the heater on, I won't turn the heat pump on, I'll just stay in bed. I won't go to the dentist, I'll just bear the pain.
Well, I've gone and been doing the same thing at home. I mean, I can heat my place, but it's the cost. And even though I'm getting the heating supplement, it just seems a tragic waste of...
It's just tragic, full stop.
So sometimes I've retreated to bed with an electric blanket on.
Yeah, that's what people do, unfortunately. Yeah. When you can't say, can you turn the heater on? Or have you got some wood for the fire? Or, well, no, I don't know, just can't afford it.
Yeah, and to heat my place, it would cost a lot, take a lot of power to heat it up to get it
because it's uninsulated,
Room temperature, So I'm lucky in some respects. I'm not quite as bad as some of those people that they're referring to.
That's quite terrible.
There's a damn indictment in the country, though, isn't it? When so many people are struggling.
You're seeing a lady like this.
Yeah.
The picture of a lady.
Elderly
pushing an old
supermarket trolley or something.
It looks like a pram.
Old pram,
and it was kind of reminded me of that old song. Have you seen the old lady or woman who wanders the streets of London?
I know who you mean, Ralph. I remember the singer. Folk singer.
Yeah.
Wanders the streets of London. Yeah.
Yeah, and it goes on. It's a good song. And you listen to the verses.
It's a social commentary in a song. It describes...
Of the time.
That's what... 40 years ago,
like 60 years ago.
And we've still got the same problems.
Yeah.
If not worse.
Yeah.
And yet our wealth inequality's got through the roof,
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We're a wealthy country, but the wealth's all in the hands of a small percentage.
We're glad you're back.
Oh, thank you.
From your brief sojourn.
I felt a bit faint, I don't think I've had any food for the last 3 or 4 days. Probably.
Yeah, you probably need. Yeah, you did some fish and chips, friend.
Another thing I've got was, I think it's a positive. The Green Party, for the benefit of the listeners, I'm not endorsing any particular party's policy. I'm just commenting on the article that's appeared in the paper, just in the interest of impartiality. But the Green Party wants law banning excessive supermarket prices. Private members' bill drafted to amend the Commerce Act and follow the Australian model, which just came into being fairly recently. Yes, about curbing excessive prices and will look to other parties, including New Zealand First, for support, because New Zealand First has also mooted this idea about better competition or better prices.
Yeah.
And the law in Australia came into effect last month. So this private members bill is following along on the similar lines, where the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission is tasked with monitoring prices and bringing any prosecutions to court for supermarkets or chain stores that are deemed to be charging excessive prices for their goods or their food items. So I think that's a good one.
Yeah, there was an article on Stuff talking about, kind of in that vein, about the price of beef mince just going up and up and up.
I saw that, yeah.
So, and that runs kind of in line with this.
This is like excessive profits above the fact that supply and demand and food prices have gone up anyway without price gouging.
So you would think, going back to that mince one, if the price is going up and up, up and up and up, and people can't afford it, so...
What happens to that meat?
Yeah, what happens to it? Does it still go up and up and up?
Yeah. Well, it goes rotten, so to check it out.
Well, yeah. It has to be dumped, doesn't it?
Yeah, because that's the sort of thing you don't go... That doesn't go to a freeze store, though. No.
And that's where the... You know, we waste 30-something percent of our food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look... Supermarkets want to make profit, and the same at home, I guess. You know, it's what you don't waste if you.
But we're going all out for beef production, and then, which is pleasing the farmers because they're getting their money. But it comes to a grinding halt when people here in the country can't afford it.
And there is resistance. Now, I go to my supermarket, I won't name it, but it's a good supermarket and everything else, and I've noticed for the last probably 6 months, maybe 8 months, resistance from shoppers. There's often discounted beef, etc., and you can tell that...
It's not actually fresh.
Which is good to a certain point, because, aged meat, nothing wrong with that.
But it's got to a point that, well...
And there's resistance. You know, people going, nah, thank you very much, or have a piece of chicken, or... And we might end up like Europe, where people have meals that are just have a little bit of meat. And they're mainly of grains or rice or anything else.
I haven't bought meat in years, and the only meat I get is chicken.
Mm.
Yeah.
The problem is, if we get the bird flu coming in, the price will go up.
Oh, they can,
skyrocket.
The thing that we should talk about, we got our alien colleague back. The tragedy in Mount Maunganui.
Which
we spoke about quite a bit off air, and I think some of the points that were raised on that conversation should be mentioned here.
Yeah.
You can take the lead on that one, Fred.
Oh, I've got a disclaimer. I've got a son-in-law that works for Tauranga City Council, so I need to declare that out. It's a tragedy, and they've already had this report from some judge.
The headlines, it was preventable.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And let's face it, common sense tells you, without reports, without highly paid judges, etc., common sense tells you, you build something at the bottom of a hill,
something can go wrong.
Yeah. That's how I would, you nail it down to it. And they've had reports over the years saying basically that. You're at the bottom of a hill, something could go wrong.
Yeah.
But, of course... That Daisy Corner, is it called Daisy's Corner, the camping ground at the foot of the mount, and the hot pools there, they're very popular with people, because if you're just an ordinary little punter, you don't have an apartment at the beach overlooking the main beach or a big house.
Well used.
Yeah. So it's well used, and the pools are public pools. The council owns all that or administers all of that.
Uh-huh.
I suppose the tragedy is, okay, loss of life. But that was sheerly by bad luck. Because you've had warnings, but that slip could have gone 6 feet away, and everyone went,
few
pegs one, and tidy it up and keep going. But of course, by this one, it knocked out
a ablution block, yeah.
And people were killed. So, yeah, but if it's like a probably sometimes you're lucky and you do get a bit of a near-miss warning, and this one, obviously, they didn't.
Yeah.
And they have had slips in on that hill before. It is a, it does slip. It's a steep hill.
It's got a history of slips.
Yeah, yeah.
So you would have thought someone would have connected the dots and...
But they haven't.
Well,
I
think...
Or don't want to.
The bottom, you know, to me, the... And I grew... I had a privilege of having a grandfather having a living over there. And when I was a kid, so we used to hang around the mount a lot as a kid. But probably the troubles that, because it was council land, that the hot pools went in and the camping ground had been there a long time, I suppose if they were going to be really risk adverse, is that the word? Risk cautious or whatever you call it? The council probably should have said, no, we can't have hot pools, we can't have a camping ground there.
Mm.
We've got to make that whole area at the base.
I can imagine that a certain pool of people would have made it a voting issue. And,
Yeah.
They would have contested it.
And now there's been some lives lost, etc. It's like, oh, we need to do something, and which is fair enough.
Throwing
the council under the bus, throwing iwi under the bus, because there's still this myth about... Oh, the Maori shouldn't have chopped the trees down and all that. But, you know, it wasn't the Maori's chopped the trees down. It is grazed, that part of the mount, et cetera. It's a grass bank at the first base
of it.
And for those that are still thinking, oh, you know, trees, but large trees can actually help slips. They don't actually necessarily prevent slips because the roots go into the soil structures and they can form water channels. And that's clay. The soil over there on that side of the mountain is clay, so it is slippery.
Right.
Yeah.
But, okay, what do you do about it? Do you learn from it? The bottom line is, if any tragedy, you have to go, what do we do? How do we make sure it never happens again?
Mm.
You know, and that's what should happen.
One would hope.
Yeah. You would hope, yeah.
But we often get that. We were talking before about Cave Creek. On the platform.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, that was reported for a long time beforehand that the thing creaked and groaned and all that. But nothing was done until it was too late to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Even the Murawai one, and that was, you know, how that slipped, you know, those firemen died.
Yeah.
Well, there had been a disaster there before.
Yeah.
Same space, same place.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like not learning from your mistakes. So, yeah.
And fair enough. I'm not saying that they shouldn't do an inquiry and all that into it. Do something about it. But also, it's all very well blame. Okay. Acknowledge what we could have done better and then do something to rectify it, which will never bring those lives back.
No, they won't. No, never.
But do we say something about how many people are killed in car accidents every week?
Mm.
You know, how many people, it's, you know, and okay, it's not
and despite the numbers, we still get them.
Yeah. But to be fair, no one who's going into a camping ground or anything else, you know, you should have a high degree of confidence while you're washing your willy that you're not going to get a landslip on top of you.
Yeah.
You know, that's putting it bluntly, you know. So, there was culpability there, and the council owns it on behalf of the Tauranga Mount Maunganui residents, so they have to do something.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Well, 30 years, a track record of disaster or things going on means that there was a problem 30 years ago, and that's when the point should have started.
Mm.
And plan of action saying, well, as you said, why did they build in the first place?
It almost needs to be a joint thing, that
the
council and the community being on board and having a common plan or whatever to prevent this happening.
Instead of throwing people under the bus, which is...
Just blame someone else.
Just pass the buck stuff. It's everybody should have a part to play. Iwi, as you said before, council, we the people,
the residents.
Make it a joint effort.
Because we can't bring those people back. And we should have, and you know, in hindsight...
But the onus is then on the community to avoid it happening again. As much as possible to
And I say that the unpleasant reality is they might have to, it's shut now, so they might have to just say, no, that's it. That spare bit of land between the base of the mount and the road that joins the two things, they might have to say, no, that's just staying as a reserve now.
Yeah.
Mm. And not have even campers on it or anything, you know?
Because the lay of the land is it's kind of like, the word I use is like a gulch, like a little gully.
Yeah,
where it came down, and you would think, anyway, nah, never build there. But what do you do? Yeah, reserve, good idea, planted in grass, maybe, tea tree? I don't know.
Yeah.
Tea tree is not so prone to down the hill like you'll say, your big trees.
Because they still do. I must imagine they've still got a herd of, what's it, flock of sheep? Herd of sheep?
Flock.
Flock. Make a new you
know. No, flock of seagulls. yeah. But who would have cleared the land in the first place? What was the plant life on it there originally, sort of thing? Yeah.
Well, probably
in different times, different regulations.
Yeah, all those sort of things.
Different criteria, all sorts of things come into play.
And you just need to look at the mount from afar, and not just the mount, any hill, basically, you see slips on them.
Of course you do.
The biggest problem they've probably got is the fact that it's a big high hill, as you well know. Mm. I always thought it'd be a boulder come out of the cliff, you know, right at the top of the mount. It's got a cliff face. I always thought one day one of those boulders going to come out, and these, you know, it could be 50-ton boulder or 100-ton boulder, rolls down the hill and takes out, you know.
Did they have that problem up there before with that?
They've had a few boulders over the years.
So didn't they have what they call ramps or catches or what do they call them to stop them?
They'd use them, yeah, I don't know about the mount, but they do use them when they're road building and that. You often see big wire catches, catch fences.
Yeah, and when we spoke off air, and you made the point, though, Fred, about avalanche-prone areas of the world, there are those with a little bit more of civil engineer intelligence to able to guide the avalanche through without risk to life.
Yeah, so they build retaining walls, and every so often in the retaining walls they have a slipstream, so to speak.
Mm.
So if there is movement, it can slip into somewhere and not just keep building up pressure.
A particular area.
Takes a bit of pressure off the retaining wall, and it slips out into an open area that there's no campers, etc.
But no, probably shouldn't be campers there in the first place, to be frank. Yeah. Given the layout of the land.
So that's really should get. I mean, if they really have to go back to it, is it a place that actually? Now we know more about technology and everything else.
Yeah.
They might have to turn it back into reserve, and that's it.
We have all this. We're a smart race. We have all these technology. We can design programs which show how land will how it will play out in disasters like heavy rain, earthquake, or whatever else. And we haven't had anything in play in regard to this matter.
Yeah, and say the disappointment is there has been reports about it and all that, and everyone's probably. You know, it's like lots of things in life. You know that three things need fixing. You only tend to fix the one that breaks first.
Yeah.
You know.
Or the one you can afford to fix.
Or exactly, and that's another thing. You know, and to build a retaining wall at the base of the mount, how much would that cost?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be.
You know, it's not huge, but it's probably 400 yards between the two, the harbour and the beach. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe 500 yards. So that's quite a big retaining wall.
Yeah. So the best option would probably be a reserve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reserve. And nothing built there.
Yeah. That would be.
Yeah.
Probably where it'll end up, I would say.
And that would be a good idea.
Well, it'd certainly be cost effective, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Be cost effective, and then you just get it.
Yeah, the problem's gone away.
Yeah.
Or you remove people from a proper area.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, okay, New Year's Eve, the young ones all sleep there, et cetera, on the grass. And
we can only do so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even if they put in a lower plant life, not your big trees like your like your mirus or your puri reels or whatever else that grows in that area, just low-level stuff,
yeah.
Let's say heavy roots, you know, lots of water.
Yeah. It's a gravity, but it's it'll unfold, and then there'll be people in council, and there'll be people other people who will be thinking, well, maybe I could have done more, or maybe I should have looked at it more carefully.
But then there'll be the other people.
Hindsight,
who are only thinking in terms of money.
Or they want to have a particular go, and if it's having a go at iwi or it's having a go at the council, overrides the sort of, okay, what happened? How do we move on from this, you know?
Yeah. I know that their so-called local MP, Uffendale.
Yeah, it's a national... just to rub it in, sorry. just to be informative to the members of the public on a completely neutral basis, the amount has extremely high wealth factor per square foot, square metre. You know, it's a well, that first part of the mount under the mountain through the first couple of suburbs, what do you call it? A block of streets, very high value, hugely high, you know.
Yes.
So there's a lot of wealth there, and it is a National Party
area
hold, you know.
Yeah.
What's in the name? Sam Uffendale.
Uffendale.
Yeah.
He moaned about
it. So they can't blame the Labor Party for this one. This is all on...
Yeah.
They'll try, but, yeah.
So potentially they've had a slip there. Where along that mountain would, you know, there's also where you get your geographics and all that, your graphics on your computer. Where else could a potential slip happen? In some of those well-heeled areas?
Oh, yeah. And they've had them. I know where my mother used to live in Otamaita. They had a... area, and they actually had to pull down two or three houses because it was slipping away, and turned it into reserve. Had to compensate the house owners, etc. But they did it, you know, because it was the right thing to do, you know.
And they've done these things before when they've had disasters like this. Like Abbotsford is a classic example in Dunedin.
Yeah,
that whole suburb slipped away, so they no more, don't build there.
Yeah, well, makes sense, doesn't it?
It does make sense. It makes a lot of sense.
We tend to be, as a society, and I'm not trying to pick on anyone, but as a society, we tend to be reactive. It's a lot easier to, you know, something breaks, it gets fixed. We don't tend to be the what do you call it? We tend to be the people at the bottom of the cliff.
Ambulance,
rather
than
the...
Yeah.
What's the saying there, Mick?
Reactionary rather than preventive.
Yeah.
Ambulance,
we have been.
I guess a lot of these things they try and argue. Oh, what's the percentage? What are the odds of that sort of event happening? Blah blah blah. Because they're worried about money.
Yeah,
money culpability factored in it somewhere.
Yeah, and don't forget, I don't know if that, like, from a income point of view, what sort of whether the council made turned a profit on the camping ground and the hot pools.
Yeah.
But the other thing that really does hurt the mount is the walk around the mount was extremely popular.
Yeah.
By the local residents, you know, they'd all have their check shirts on and their boot. Sorry.
Blue apparel.
Sorry. And the lot enjoyed walking around the
mount. So that's
a hardship like a physical hardship for the residents, that they can no longer go for their morning walk around the mount.
Yeah.
Mm. Close to the walkway, yeah.
Yeah. Which people forget that it you know, the mount is a common used facility, I guess.
You're always going to get members of the public who will resist and say, oh, it's my right, blah, blah, blah. Until something happens, and then they'll squeal.
Yeah. But anyway, it'll all come out in the inquiries and I don't even know. Okay, they're trying to find out, are they trying to find out who to blame, or they're trying to find out what caused it, or how to...
Or they focus on how can we prevent this happening again.
Yeah, what can we do
this?
Yeah, blaming people is a low-hanging fruit one, isn't it?
It's easier to throw in, right?
And what can happen, of course, they can go, oh, well, we'll just chuck a couple from the bottom of the tree, we'll sacrifice. Sorry, Joe, sorry, Benny, goodbye, thank you for your service.
And that's exactly what the media was saying on the news about it, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, or who's going to be sacked over this.
Yeah.
It's going to be that sounds like some poor old Joe.
This is a problem that's been potential for a number of years.
Well, 1999, I think the first report came out.
So 27 years.
Something like that, yeah. Who should be blamed? Should the council?
The original council back in 1999.
Or the ones one inherited it?
Yes. Where do you...
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's easy to blame.
I think the mayor and his council have accepted responsibility. We know.
Council.
Yes, they do.
Well, it's, you know, I don't know what their actual ownership. I don't know if it's gone back to Ngaitarangi, local iwi, or
the council manages it.
I'm not sure how it works.
It's an awkward one. But it shouldn't be about apportioning blame. People died. Their deaths shouldn't be in vain.
And I personally would like them to think, okay, how do we fundraise enough so we can keep it as a, you know, in one way, the right thing, if you could do it, wouldn't be, is to go, how do we make this place safe so people can, ordinary punters can come and stay a week at the camping ground.
Require resources and money.
And it'll be millions of
dollars. Instead of pointing fingers, that's not going to solve anything.
Well, I'm going to say you do sort of need to know.
This is what happened under this council. A report was commissioned. It was done. This is what they were said. What happened to that report? Why did it end up in file number 13?
How many reports have they had since 1999?
Three or four.
Did not act on those reports.
But in defence of that, how many reports did Christchurch have about potential earthquakes? Exactly. How many?
It won't be the only ones.
No.
And that's what they spoke to the gentleman who's a spokesperson for the STV families.
Spoke
to him,
So there's, and that's the reality of politics and all that. You get so many things. You have a wish list and a want list and a must-do list. And unfortunately, in New Zealand, we tend to wait till we react rather than prevent.
And then it costs even more.
All these inquiries, I doubt if all the people doing the inquiry are doing it for free.
No, not pro bono, Fred. No way.
So that's an unfolding story, and it'll be interesting to know. But basically, it still goes back to what I said at the beginning. You build something at the bottom of a mountain.
You're asking for trouble.
Yeah, things can happen.
Not today or next week, but down the road.
Sometime in the future. And I think it's a lesson for all of New Zealand.
And we've had a few over the years, you know.
Yeah, you talked about Cave Creek. We had the STV building in Christchurch. In the earthquake, the Murawai thing, the one, and those are just a few,
So what you hope from it? It makes every other council and government department and
a bit more attentive.
Yeah, they go there's better read that report again about.
Yeah, how many reports were written on the subject?
And who's acting on it?
Who signed off and said, "Oh, well, don't have to worry about it."
Because if you've got X amount of money in one hand and X amount you need, it becomes a juggling game, and competing factors,
So it could have been prevented. The disaster, loss of life, could have been prevented if things were followed through. But they weren't.
And I say, it goes back. It was still just by chance. It had gone 10 feet to one side and...
Yeah, no problem.
No loss of life. However, that would have identified a problem.
Would have been the wake-up call. Because
it was closed. That was a warning. Do something about it now.
And they've had slips along the track at various times. So, and had to shut it for a few days, etc. But this one was just unfortunate. We didn't get a pre-warn,
But the slips would have, the reports would have come with those slips. You know, being a council plan or whatever it was.
Someone would have said the track. You know, you can't just the track slip. It'll be written down what happened.
And what was done, what remedial work was required, what do we need to do to future proof it, as they say.
So that'll all come out. That's good public information.
It's good information to know, but don't want to sweep it under the carpet. Sad though. People didn't have to lose their lives.
No, and to be fair, there was actually another slip on another hill at Welcome Bay in the Bower Plain on the same day.
And people died too.
And there were two people died, and it was in a house that had been sitting on that spot for 80 years or something.
And it went down.
So you just think, you can think, it's safe enough and... That can happen.
Down comes a slide. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I've got something to add, but something different. Luxon. And his, we've got 5 minutes about this.
We'll go for it.
And he was talking, and he was.
How many expletives can you fit in 5 minutes? Great.
You get more if you use foreign ones.
If you knew what they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he had a talk down in Christchurch. And he was heckled by a number of people.
Yeah.
And we just happened to listen to some of the what was coming out. I think the first one sounded rather crazed, but I shouldn't say that. That was just being a bit mean. But that was to do with the Denniston Plateau, or mining on the Denniston Plateau.
Yeah.
He got really upset and he was pointing the finger at Mr. Luxon.
Yeah.
And he was
removed
from the process.
Yeah.
But the other ones, I suspect, because it was to do with complicity in Gaza.
Yeah.
They were the main ones.
Yeah.
And they were also dragged out.
Yeah.
And I think one person walked out. I think she pointed the finger and I'm out of here.
Completely. Yeah.
And the person who was kind of the, what would you call him, mistress of ceremony was Upston, telling people to be quiet. People who are here to ask questions, and these rebel rousers or whatever were disrupting the process.
By asking questions.
By asking direct questions.
Well, and sometimes, to be fair, my experience is when they say, there's question time, sometimes there's questions, but unfortunately, what often sneaks in is someone grandstanding wanting to make a statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been to those sort of meetings that,
They don't just ask a question, they stand there and hijack.
Yeah, they say basically the brief in here is, or the synopsis at the start of this article was saying the concerns included Gaza, mining on the West Coast, possibly, Fast Track, and others that were inaudible.
So do I take it that our Prime Minister didn't address these issues that were raised?
Oh, I can. What did he say? I can talk about that afterwards. After the end of this, the spiel.
So he didn't.
However, if these people were dragged away by security or police or whatever.
How unfortunate! He couldn't address the question.
It was an interesting one, to be frank. She was.
So he's not going to get an easy run. Whether that helps, because I know we're at the Hamilton Boys High, it must be a couple of months ago now, and they had Prime Minister was there, public meeting, and I did wave at him. But that went in there, and a few people started off with questions, then made statements, and then got dragged out. But the result from the people there, which is about 500 people there for night, they all clapped as they were dragged, escorted out.
Yeah.
So, if you're trying to win people over, you're probably better to be going, oh, thank you, Prime Minister. It'd be really nice if do that.
Before we finish, the first speaker was the Denniston Plateau one. The first came from a long-haired, bearded, wearing a checkered flannelette shirt. "You're turning Denniston Plateau into a giant Mordor monster mine," he yelled, before flinging his hands up in the air and escorting himself out of the audience before security. Yeah. He unsuccessfully tried to start a chant, "We are Mordor, build our Mordor brand," and he left. Luxon said, "Thank you, mate, appreciate the contribution."
Right.
Not very helpful. Yes. And the article goes on and on and on. But that's the welcome he got in Christchurch.
I hope he does get roasted.
It's election time.
I think they all should be given a roasting.
He should do it. But he's fronted up, so that's all right. He hasn't been a coward like Seymour, not fronting up. At least he doesn't have to wear a chicken suit. Okay, well, we're out of here. You'll catch us on our podcast and at www.freefm.org.nz.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.